up this morning with the sundown shining in him.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
Oh, it's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know, that's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Now, let's cut through the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning.
Hello and welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Ricky on the board. SP Futures down 8. NASDAQ Futures down 17. A little bit of a pause here. We'll see if it's a pause or just as high as it's going to go. We have the VIX up here. We have individual stacks. We've got Home Depot came out and said people are spending again. Little bit up 470, so they're doing well. I was just there; their prices keep going up, but that's okay, I guess. In this world, it's everything is good. How are you, Carl?
Well, you know, there's crazy, and then there's BS insane. I'm sure you can figure out what the two words BS stand for.
Yep,
letters. This terror. Yeah, I've been digging around trying to figure out why Tesla has been an absolute rocket ship the last, you know, 3 or 4 trading days, right, since the election was called.
The dude was on the call with Zelensky.
No, actually, there hasn't been any official recognition, but there's, you know, any time that you have something like this happen in the market and you look at, you know, you look at an individual stock and you see it's usually something that's been filed. You know, something happened, right? I mean, a drug company had a drug that was approved or, you know, whatever. And so, you know, because these kinds of revaluations typically always have some kind of a reason. Well, the street explanation that I can find, and I don't know if this is actually what's driving it or not, but the explanation is that somehow Trump being elected means that Tesla is going to get licensing for no driver operation on public roads.
They just got nailed by one of, was it a state or somebody, by saying that the thing is able to be operated without a driver when it can't be.
Well, Chief, I'm currently serving a week-long sentence in Twitmo.
Okay.
Okay. In other words, I can sign in, but I can't post anything.
You're like a cockroach. You can sign in, well, and you can't sign out.
Well, I was jailed.
Yes, okay.
Okay. Now, my offense is determined by an AI, not by a human, because with the speed that it occurred, it couldn't have been a human, was that I used violent speech, that I advocated violence.
Well, it's possible.
Well, okay, but I know exactly what I posted that caused it, and actually it had a typo in it, and by the time because I dictated it, I did it from my phone, and Google being as good at this as Apple is means that sometimes it picks up the wrong word.
You have mentioned, right? Like to hang people and shoot people once in a while.
I do that on my blog. Okay. What I did was in response to the AP telling people to go get in public.
You need to add the word figuratively whenever you say that, just by the
way. The Associated Press, by the way, tweeted out a thing that telling people to go get their next series of COVID boosters. Okay, which they're, of course, you know, being that they get paid by all the pharma bows. I mean, you know, but rather than put this out as advertising, they of course consider this to be you know, an endorsement as opposed to advertising. There is a difference between the two, of course.
Blurred.
Well, yeah, not supposed to be in a presidential campaign, but we'll get to that one in a minute.
Watch CNBC all day. Try and find the difference between the advertising and the news.
Yeah. So anyway, so my response to them was that they could stick their poison in their own butt. That's what got me banned.
Well, I can... These people have power.
Well, but here's the point. On no planet could that reasonably be construed as a threat of violence, okay, if a human read it.
No.
But a computer made this decision in, you know, 0.004 of a second and banned my account. Now...
Well, you're only in jail for a week.
Well, I understand. I'm in jail for a week. However, point being, the car is driving and makes a similarly stupid and wrong call, and your car just ran a kid over. Okay. Now, that one's not retractable, right?
Yeah.
Okay. And doesn't expire a week later either. And the problem with this ought to be apparent, but, you know, of course, the separation of these two things, oh, forget about it, you know, nobody's... The idea that, and as I've said, if Elon or anybody else, I don't care, you know, because there are other companies that make electric vehicles. They're not doing so well, you know, Rivian and some of these others.
Tell you what, those Rivian trucks are really good looking, aren't they?
I think they're ugly as hell. I wouldn't own one of those things.
The pickup truck? Pickup truck's really nice. You're talking about the Tesla wedge thing, whatever that stupid thing is.
Oh, the Cybertruck is garbage. I mean, look. I get it. Aesthetics, you know, aesthetics is in the eyes of the beholder, right? Always. But I don't like the appearance of any of those. I don't like the.
I'm a pickup truck sort of dude, and I'm not. Most of them don't look all that hot. I think the Rivian is one of the nicest looking pickup trucks I've ever seen. Other than it's still a pickup truck.
I think the front end. I think the front end grill is.
Well, you know,
I think it's garbage.
You got me there. I've only gone up behind him on the highway. I haven't seen the front.
Yeah, I'm just saying.
You got me there.
It's aesthetics.
See, I admit those things.
But it's all. But I mean, you know, that's the deal with aesthetics.
Well, do you like the RAM? I never liked the RAM. I ever thought that was the biggest studly thing.
Not really. It
looks like it's
new...
a semi, but it's a pickup truck.
Right, but so much of the new stuff that's out there. I mean, I look at it and I go, "You got to be kidding me! I don't want that thing in my driveway."
No.
So the idea that all of a sudden magically Trump being elected means that somehow this is going to come to me, that's Looney Tunes. But this is the world we live in today. Here's another
one second. There is a group of people in this world, and he is one of them in one man's opinion, that believe not one rule, not one impediment, not one
apply to them.
And
right.
There is no mystery to me why he's attached himself to the behind of the president-elect, because he feels the exact same way.
Oh,
they are two peas in a pod, but I'll bet their relationship lasts 3 months.
Yeah, there's going to be a problem with that now, don't you think?
Yep.
I think there will be, and I think you're right. You and I agree on that. Now, here's another good one, okay? And as I've been a treasurer for a political campaign, for a House run, so I know what the law is. When it comes to campaign finance disclosures and things like this, because I had to know that, otherwise I had to sign those reports to the FEC.
But somebody maybe didn't like your guys, so you had to concern yourself with it. If your guys weren't in the crowd, it's okay.
Chief, I get that, but the point of the matter is that there is a non-zero risk that if you don't do things the right way, you actually could go to jail. Okay,
only if you win in the spot you're not supposed to.
Only if you're the if you're the unfavored person at that particular time. But nonetheless, the law says certain things. Okay, and I took over the treasurer's role because the guy who was doing it for the candidate, who I happened to like the guy that was running, and he was running as a libertarian, and at the time I was on the EC, so I was part of the party machinery in Florida. The guy that was doing it, I looked at, you know, what was going on within the campaign on a finance level. He asked me to take a look at it. I looked at it. I said, dude, you know, there is a very real risk. The FEC is going to come down at you like a piano.
That's because he's a libertarian.
Well, it wasn't him. It was who he had doing it. Just wasn't doing the job well. Okay. It wasn't malicious. He just wasn't doing a good job. And I said, you know, look, this can be deadly serious stuff. You don't want to play around with this, especially as a third party. And so I said, you know, I'll do it. This is not that hard. I've done bookkeeping before. Duh. I ran a company.
Plus you showed your age by using the term bookkeeping.
Well, there you go. So the thing, Oprah, you know, being that I've lived in Chicago at one time, I did a 13-year sentence in Chicago. So I still call it that, by the way. You know, your sentence is still ongoing.
Yeah, I know. It's getting tougher.
I know. It's getting hard, isn't it? So, anyway, Oprah endorsed Harris. Okay. She actually gave her an endorsement.
Well, it's not what a lot of people did.
Well, that's fine. There's nothing wrong with an endorsement. However, there is a legal distinction between an endorsement and a paid electioneering communication that is a campaign advertisement, all right? And the difference is one is paid for and the other one's not. She also denied being paid by the Harris campaign. Well, as it turns out, in the FEC filings, which, duh, you actually have to do, there's two $500,000 payments to Harpo Productions.
500 grand, that's a lot.
Well, it's $1 million. Two $500,000 payments, you know, a few days apart. So her appearance and support of Harris was a paid election commercial. Now, that's not illegal because there's no limit on what a candidate's committee can spend on a particular kind of advertising. Otherwise, you couldn't buy any, right? So there's nothing illegal with paying Oprah. What's illegal is for her to make the endorsement and to do that without disclosing that she's been paid for it.
So what about
that's a crime.
So what about any kind of promise that this guy has given Elon? Now, is that okay?
Well, those, you know, political promises are about as good as a claim that I you know, that burning that you have when you get up in the morning is not because you went to the whorehouse last night.
One of the people that I was saddled with at breakfast on Saturday brought out something about how he's going to fire all the people in Washington.
And I said, oh, yeah, sure he is.
But here's a guy that how many people does he have to fire to make up for the $9 billion that he's received from government?
Well, and this is the other thing,
you know,
too,
but it's the furthest thing from his mind. He doesn't even get what I just said.
That's oh, a, no, and you know what, Chief?
These guys, they sleep like babies every night. I'm so jealous, it's scary.
Chief, you know, if you think about the rocket shot that Tesla, the stock, has taken the last few days, it's even more stupid because one of the things that Trump has said he's going to do, now, I don't know if I believe him or not, but one of the things he says he's going to do is, you know, drill, baby, drill, right? And get rid of the EPA mandates, which have driven... Not entirely, because a lot of people just like Teslas, but they've driven a lot of the sales, and they've done it two ways. One is that if you set a fuel economy mandate that is impossible to meet on the laws of thermodynamics, right? There's just you just can't get enough percentage of the fuel energy in the fuel to the back wheels, right, to drive the car. You can't. So as a result, the only way to do it is to sell some number of vehicles that are not powered by fuels. The only way you can meet the standard across the fleet. It can't be done any other way. It's impossible. All right. So that's the squeeze play that's been put on by the Biden-Harris administration. That's what that ends up doing, though, is because Musk doesn't sell anything that's driven by fuels, he gets to sell those credits, which of course is billions of dollars that goes directly to the bottom line of the company. And some of those sales would not have happened but for these mandates. Now, some of them would have, but some of them wouldn't.
He's got a boatload of direct money from the government, too.
Well, he also, and then you also have the direct subsidies for buying them. Okay.
Right.
So there's two ways in which Tesla has directly benefited from this game.
What I dug into, they think some people think it's $9.2 billion total.
My best estimation is it's just short of 10, but that, you know, close enough. Okay. Yep. Now take that back out of their operating leverage and look at their debt picture and every, and you know, their operating cash flow, and you go, wait a minute, we got a little problem here. So assuming Trump actually drops those, all of that immediately goes to zero. Now, that if that does not revalue the company, I don't know what does. Well,
his boy toy clearly must understand it. That's why he's in the same seat with the dude.
Well, I'm sure he's trying to figure out, how do I prevent that from happening, right? I mean, this has nothing to do with him liking the Donald, and has everything to do with, oh, crap, this could really be bad. So, I mean, you know, Elon is many things. Stupid's not one of them. So that's, you know, there's that. But this is the other thing that is absolutely astounding to me is the same thing in crypto. Okay, the same sort of move in crypto. And I mean, I look at this.
And gold going straight down.
And gold has gone straight down. Well, here's the thing that I look at. So I know where people are getting the general idea from. And you know, I didn't believe that this was going to be able to be pulled off in 2016, although I made an awful lot of money the night of the election by playing the futures market from the bar as I was watching the returns come in. I actually paid everybody's tab in the place. It was a very nice night. But
now the bar you were in had three people in it, I assume.
Maybe a couple more than that. but it wasn't like, you know, there wasn't like, you know, 300 people in it. But this time, I foolishly was getting drunk in my own living room rather than in a public drinking establishment.
Just
I didn't
remember,
have
you're not drinking alone if your dog is home.
Well, I didn't have anything on.
Or cat.
I didn't have anything on the futures market and should have.
I thought you said you were naked. I thought you said you were naked. We didn't want to see that.
No, I should have had plays on, given what I expected to happen and what did happen, and that, you know, that the last time it worked out really well for me. But, you know, after it was over, I was like, oh, you know, that was dumb. I didn't get it. I wasn't in this game. But the thing is that if you go back and you look at the rate curve environment at the time, the slope was very positive leaning at the time, and it was coming down, so it was flattening, which tends to be quite bullish, okay, for equities. And in fact, over the next year, it was like a 26% return or 27% return in the S&P from the time that Trump was elected until, you know, the end of the next year. Well, that's pretty effing good, right? So,
well, okay, but now,
but on the other hand, the market hadn't been in a generally, you know, parabolic kind of move. This time it has been, and on top of that, the curve has been inverted and looks and is steepening in the general sense. The cycle clearly has turned. We are in a and by the way, these are chondroitin cycles. You're not going to stop this. So for the next 2 to 3 decades, the general trend in rates is higher. Now, that doesn't mean there won't be times they go down. There will, just like there were times they went up during the generally falling cycle. But the long-term cycle is exactly the opposite, and that always squeezes corporations that have debt on, because as it comes due, they have to roll it at higher rates. That comes directly off your operating cash flow. So I am, you know, I'm looking at this and saying, so all these people over the last week are out there bidding stuff like this up. We are already at nosebleed level PE ratios to start with.
Tesla's now 97, by the way.
Yeah, and by the way, we have a hostile and extraordinarily so yield environment when it comes to debt. Okay, now it's not the level of rates. It's which way's the trend going is whether or not it's bullish or bearish for doing that. And we are at the, you know, we have, the cycle has turned. It's not a, well, it will someday. It has turned. And I know people believe that Powell, you know, we're going back down to that 2%. No, we're not. And if you're, and just digging around and looking at this, my zero level read on this is if you take a look at somebody's balance sheet, and you look at a corporation's balance sheet, and you look at their debt outstanding, and you look at their free cash flow, not their levered cash flow, but their operating cash flow. If they cannot pay that debt off with their operating cash flow, because that's an annualized thing, so if they can't dump the debt off the balance sheet, if they have to, they're severely impaired and at risk. And
Carl, there you go. You throw cold water off the party, buddy.
Well, guess what? Amazon is a potential bankruptcy under that metric.
Well, all these places that got their borrowings at 2% and 3%, didn't somebody get like a 50-year loan? Was it Caterpillar or somebody?
Oh, no. Most of these guys are out there on standard commercial terms, where the majority of that stuff rolls on a 5 or 10 year schedule.
Okay, well, here's.
I mean, I understand there's some people that went out there and sold some very long term stuff. Okay, which by the way is kind of smart if somebody's willing to give you 2% for 50 years.
Well, I know I lab this out there every once in a while, and people wonder, geez, how old is this guy? When I started the business, and the rates were, CD rates were 15%.
Yep.
And they started to come down. The rally was in August of 82, correct?
Yep.
All right, so they started to come down in really January of 81. So about 18 months before the rally started.
Well, yeah, that's because people always are behind that curve. They don't believe it when the cycle turns.
It's not just that. It's people. It's actually. How can I say? This is gonna sound really stupid, Carl. So don't throw something at me through the mic. It's shallower and deeper than that. How can that be the same thing? The shallow part is people had never made a dime in the stock market for 14 years. Right, so
yeah.
The idea of shucking your CD because it went from 15 to 14 to 13 and a half to 12, and somehow leaving the party and going to find wherever the hell your mutual fund guy was painting houses someplace, and right. Said I want to buy some mutual funds. That was not even you would have said that in a cocktail party, you'd have been banned from the bar, which is worse than what you're banned from. And probably you'd have been kicked out. Well, right now, you know, nobody talks to people now that are retired and have portfolios more than I do. You can't bend somebody from saying, you know. And the weird part was that during that 18-month period, Carol, the market was down another 20% when the rates were going down. So you're talking about this turn, which for those of us that have been in the business a long time is very concerning for the market. Of course, we have other things going on. You have the market has now become not very many companies that seem to be above everything because they can just raise prices and it doesn't matter. So far, they are above the fray. I mean, I don't know what has to happen for Home Depot to actually have to lower prices to where they lose money. I mean, I can't even imagine that because it's the only place to go. Half the the country. So you got those issues. I mean, when I say issues, those things are walking alongside our theory, but it doesn't surprise me. I mean, if somebody owned Tesla stock today, I couldn't get somebody, hey, you know, the thing's 347, it was just like, you know, 270, don't you think?
I know.
Maybe next year we could buy some of these, you know, 330 puts just in case. Oh man, why would I do that?
Protecting that gain is kind of like buying car insurance.
It's totally different. Somehow or another, people, because you'll sit there all day long and listen on TV. I mean, what you've said earlier about, you know, the timing and this and the rate, all this sort of presupposes something. The guy was on yesterday talking about this is the most bullish time of the year. You got to get long the market. Without regard to the level, but that sort of presupposes that the crummy time of the year, maybe you were down a little bit and you're going to recover that, but we were up the whole time.
Oh, I know. And you know, it's
every
just,
party can't be another drink. I
mean, well, sure it can.
I guess.
Until your liver turns into a little shriveled up prune,
yeah,
right?
Or it gets bigger.
It's all full of, you know, cirrhosis, yeah. I just look at this and the astonishing. I mean, it's one thing if the market is all beaten up because of the political environment, and you know, everyone is moaning that they're getting strangled by the government, right? And so, you know, and so prices are, you know, for assets are low. And then you get a, you know, you get a sea change, and it's, you know, it's Reagan's Dawn in America speech, right? And by God, you know, all right, we're going to revalue things. But that's not the world we were in.
No.
On election
night. Well, we're talking about Biden, whatever people think about the dude, the market is up, what, 55% since he's been in office.
Yeah,
and it's so not. It's I, not I, like he screwed you. I mean, duh.
Well, and what I look at here is that you're talking about, you know, you look at, you go look at where this has been, from Trump's, you know, Trump's first run, okay, and you're saying, okay, you know, it's basically a triple, pretty close. Are you really bidding this up, thinking you're going to get another one?
Well, maybe
from here,
but. What do you think? Last night I was...
Chief, do you think the S&P is going to trade 18,000?
Everybody thinks that. Everybody thinks that. He's going to lower corporate taxes. He's going to do this, and he's going to do that, and all of a sudden it's going to right to the moon. By the way, did you see the Saturday Night Live thing? The two guys, Michael Che, and who's the other dude? And the black guy's drinking, right?
Right.
But he goes... some of those guys are clever. I have to say that for him. He goes, in the 3 days since the election, rich people have made, the top 1% have made $60 or $80 billion or something. And they show a picture of this kind of heavy, advanced middle-aged white guy with a beard and a MAGA hat and a flannel shirt saying, "Don't worry, yours will be here next week." don't worry, you'll get yours next week. I mean, really? You know, there's a lot to be said for that. Nobody in our group, Carlin, and we're not, you're probably a little more advanced than most of the people listening to the show, but nobody in our group's going to get a dime from this guy. And it hasn't got a, didn't get a dime from the guy before him. And I wonder if we're in this kind of a thing, whatever side people are on, that people are hurting to the point where every 4 years we're going to throw the bum out and try the other side because whatever it is ain't working. I hope we're not in one of those cycles, but I think maybe we are.
Yeah, I just, you know, what I keep looking at here is that when you look at the budgetary impact and you look at the trajectory on the debt, you know, and we heard this last week with, you know, with Powell, well, you know, we're not going to do anything about the, you know, going below our 2% target. You know, I just sat down, did a back of the envelope calculation, assuming that productivity numbers remain within the historical range, somewhere in the historical range. Doesn't really matter where, because realistically, those tend to be between 2 and 3%. Okay, that's a historical range for those, so it's fairly tight and mildly positive, not greatly positive.
Hey, Carl, I think we got a dash over here to Joel. Why don't you hang if we don't get you back on, if everybody shows up. We'll talk about this on Friday. That's a big story you're talking about.
Yeah, this is a really big deal.
It's not a 30-seconder.
Right. Well, it's a couple of minutes, but yeah, it's not a 30-second. But I can explain it in a couple of minutes, and it's actually one of the key macroeconomic elements right now.
And it's also one of those things that everybody who's just sitting along the market wants to cover their ears. Oh, we don't want to hear anything like that.
Well, you better listen to this one, because
I agree. Futures down 9, NASDAQ futures down 35. Be right back. We think we have Joel on. Kind of be right back. Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. As you all know, the broad markets, especially tech, have been hot for a while. Lots of reasons. New technology, small fixed income returns, a lot of Fed cash, maybe some good management. Recently, however, the rates on fixed income investments, even U.S. Treasury, have risen from the very low levels. Treasuries are more attractive. There might even be some interesting bonds out there. Also, the bull run has some leading stocks with historically high valuations, maybe making long-only positions a little riskier. So what to do? I think the answer is flexibility. The market may keep going higher. It may not. It could even go down. Is fixed income a thought for some part of the portfolio? Rates are not zero anymore. You may want to protect some gains. Think about some rebalancing. Address some growing concentration issues. Maybe thinking about commodities. We at PTI may have a solution just right for you. Open an account at PTI Pro Direct, PTI's online trading platform using the Interactive Broker high-end platform. There you will find competitive rates and solid execution across all product lines and traditionally high interest on money balances. In addition, at any time you can seamlessly decide for fixed income investments to access Dan Janitas at Kratos Capital for management services. Dan and his team work tirelessly to achieve the highest returns they can, whatever risk category you are comfortable with. You can also quickly access my team
for investment services and a wide array of investment strategies on the security or commodity side, protective strategies, concentration issues, or straight long. In one place, you'll be able to be flexible and ride whatever the future market holds with people you are used to hearing and trusting every day. Need help? You got it. Don't need help? That's okay, too. You'll have a great self-management platform with help always available. This market can change on a dime. I believe, like everyone else, having the right people there if needed is the way to go. Call me at 312-663-4310 or email me at tom@ptisecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Lone Wolf X Action Jacks. I'm Tom Allen, Ricky on the board. SP Futures down 10, NASDAQ Futures down 38. Not a little bit, but we've been up for 4 days, so I mean, it's not a whole hell of a lot. Even if we don't come back, which we seem like we probably will. Dow's down 31, even though we've got Home Depot came out earlier. Home Depot's now up 6.25, but everything else is kind of red. Not horrible, but IBM down 89 cents, JP Morgan down 89. The banks have been flying. I don't know what they think they're going to get out of the new administration, but something. Salesforce is down 223. United Health down 175. So the reds outnumber the greens a little bit here in the Dow, but not very much. Over in Europe, there, these guys were up pretty good yesterday. Now, the DAX has turned around the other way, but they were up 2% yesterday, I think. We're only down 177.9% today. FTSE down 79. That's a full 1%. CAC around down 97, 1.3%. Not sure when those guys are selling off, but they are. In Asia, Nikkei down 157.4%. Hang Seng down 580. This is the number. 2.8%. They're down under 20,000. 19,840. I wouldn't expect that. Shanghai down 48, 1.4%. Post-election rally fails to lift regional optimism in the Asia-Pacific markets. There you go. That's the headline. Bonds up 6 basis points, reversing the down move of yesterday, 4.37. The Bund down 2 basis points, 2.30. Japan up 2, 1.01. Oil, which has been selling off here, up 34 cents, 68.38, still at the bottom end of the range. Brent up 36 cents, 72.19. Natural gas up a penny, 2.93. RBOB up a penny, 1.97. As one of the guys asked me last night, see, Trump's already helping in the gases. I go, what about the part coming off the summer blend? Did you forget? Oh, yeah, I forgot about that. Gold down 760, 26.10. After being 27.50 for a long time, it's gotten whacked this week. Silver down 7 cents, 30.54. Copper down 8 cents, 4.14. Foreign exchange, the dollar is up again with the euro down to 106. British pound down to 128. That's really the cause of the gold heading south here. Japan down also, 154. Was down to a 143. Remember, this is the flip side. That's 154 yen to the dollar, not the other way around. Crypto, which has been flying up, it's down $2 today, 87,115. That's huge high, though, for that thing. Yesterday, as a review, Dow was up 304, S&P up 5, NASDAQ up 11. Ricky, a lot of stuff there. What do you got for us, Traffic, Weather, Sports?
Morning, Chief. It's currently 6:37 a.m. here in beautiful Chicago, 48 degrees right now with a high of 50. Mostly cloudy and breezy this morning, followed by clouds giving way to some sun. Tonight will be cloudy and breezy as well with a low of 41 degrees over to Phoenix, Arizona. 52 degrees right now with a high of 76. Sunshine and pleasant. Tonight will be clear and cool with a low of 48 degrees. Traffic in Chicago, inbound Kennedy from Monroe's, 25 minutes. We're looking at 48 minutes inbound Edens from Lane Cook, inbound Eisenhower from Wolf, 34 minutes, inbound Dan Ryan from 95th, 21 minutes, and Stevenson from 294 to the Dan Ryan, 37 minutes. Sports, NFL Week 11 is here. Thursday, November 14, we have Commanders at Eagles at 7:15 p.m., and this Sunday, November 17, we have Packers at Bears at 12 p.m., Cardinals on bye week after a 4-win streak. Lastly, NBA, yesterday the Bulls lose to the Cavaliers, 113-119, and today we got the Suns playing the Utah Jazz at Salt Lake City at 8 p.m. Back over to you, Chief.
Bulls, Hawks, Bears. Yikes.
Yep.
We have Mr. Joel?
Yes, we do.
You sure do, Chief.
Joel, how are you, buddy? All right, how are you? I thought your boys might beat Indiana, but they did not.
Oh, boy. What a debacle. I mean, coaching mistakes, mental mistakes. Very, very disappointing season. Don't know any other way to put it. We got to beat Northwestern to be bowl eligible. And then, I don't know if we're going to be 3 or 4 point underdogs to Ohio State. So, A lot is riding on flipping this quarterback. The top rated player in the country, his name's Bryce Underwood. He's currently at Belleville. I don't know. I'm hearing five.
Belleville, is that the insane asylum? It was Bellevue.
Belleville, Michigan. Oh, right. Just outside Ann Arbor.
Did you watch any of the? Well, I didn't watch it, but I was happened to be moseying along in traffic out to COD, and of course I'm stuck in traffic, and I'm buzzing for a football game, and I ended up listening to Ole Miss versus Georgia.
Uh huh.
And you know you can get, I believe that you can get an awful lot more information from the radio people than you ever do from the TV guys. The TV guys are so Mr. Good looking suit guy can't say anything wrong or anything any informative, but. I was talking about Ole Miss and how many they'd realized they needed these holes and they went and filled them during the portal. And they got a guy on their team. I don't want to say anything bad about him because the poor guy, he's not their star running back, but he's one of the running backs. And I guess he's real good on Ole Miss. The dude was in a, you know, he's with his family. The place gets, his house gets whacked by a tornado. And I don't know if it, I could, you know, it was somebody's honking next to me. I think, the grandparents, the mother, the brother, or somebody all get killed except him in the house. And so the guy, somebody raises him, and, you know, obviously did a pretty nice job. But the kid's on his fourth college. What would you say if I said, let's just get rid of all this crap. Let's just have, for the guys that aren't in school, just put a dorm somewhere there. They can stay all day long and smoke pot. I don't care what they do. They don't even have to go to school. If you go to school, the tuition is taxed, you know, is income. You don't want to have to. Where could this kid possibly have gone to school if he's four colleges and was a junior college? Then he went to Clemson. Then he went to a Division I A. And then now he's at Ole Miss. I mean, forgot. How do you? What kind of? What do you think he's taking? Pre-med? I don't think so.
No. Chief, we've been talking about this for a while. I mean, this is it. This is the new normal for college football.
Well, why don't we just get rid of the sham? What's the point? Why the graduate students? Nobody keeps track of them, whether they go to school or not, right?
Chief, I don't have an answer for that. I mean, yeah. It's all about the money. It's all about the TV revenues. Yeah. It's all about expanding the college playoff, which Michigan will not be in this year, but. So it remains the same, Chief. I mean, it's just, it's just money.
What do you think would happen? Kevin brought this up. What do you think would happen if, after all the students are gone, if Michigan had a home game, like the week before Christmas at a night game, where would you get 100,000 people?
They've still been coming. We still have the streak going. But I don't know. That probably won't be a problem for.
Well, you guys are near Detroit and so forth. But the reason why I brought this up is the Irish. If the season ended the other day, they would have been playing in Penn State. Well, what's in College Station other than the students? And if they're going, why the hell you get put 100,000 people there? Middle of nowhere.
Well, it's not too far. I mean, Penn State, you can't get there from here.
Well, that's what I mean.
Yeah, but anyways, Chief, nice rally. Winning streak here in the markets. A little bit in jeopardy today besides some good earnings out there from Home Depot and Shopify. A lot of momentum in this market, and the pullback's a bit shallow. So right now, bulls in full control here as we head into Thanksgiving. Everything, it's been pretty much IWM's finally been catching up.
Well, it's been racking. We have a lot of people now. We've probably had our best 3 weeks in IWM ever.
I think so. So a lot of optimism out there of immediate changes, and we'll see if they come to fruition.
Well, what are the changes going to be, you think?
I haven't been appointed to any cabinet positions, but
why not?
I don't know. Get rid of the Fed? I don't know.
That's a good one.
Deportation of immigrants is supposed to be good for the economy.
In whose mind?
Tariffs on China.
Are we going to make this a TV event? This deportation. A lot of people want to.
Won't be for me, but it should be interesting. I think the only thing right now people should put on their radar is CPI and PPI. CPI on Wednesday, PPI on Thursday. We'll see. Everything seems to be pretty benign in the inflation world. So
it is, and really yet you see Home Depot's stuff goes up, or you see Pepsi saying that the only reason why their revenue is up is because they raised prices and the actual case count was down. We ignore all that? I guess we do.
Yes. Right? Yes, you do.
Yes, we do. In a word, yes. So do you have your basketball tickets?
I do have my season basketball tickets. A little bit of a disappointing loss that I watched actually flying back. I got the game. I was happy until the end. But I like what Dusty May's doing with our team. We're deep. We're deep. We just got to find that solid rotation to get things going. So
What happened to the last guy? They kick him out or did he leave, Howard?
Juwan got fired after the worst season in Michigan basketball history. He's now an assistant for the New Jersey Nets.
And so the new guy, these recruits, or did he get these guys through the portal or all of the above or what?
Dusty May brought a couple kids from FAU. His top recruit to go to FAU, freshman LJ Kaysen, came to Michigan. So he's on the team. And then he brought in Danny Wolf from, basically we got 11 of 14 new players. And you know who's a freshman on the team? Scottie Pippen's kid.
Really? Is he any good? Is he any good?
He's been a little banged up. Hasn't made an appearance yet, but I'll let you know.
Is Howard's kid still there?
Yes, he is. He is. He is not. See, I hear he's recovering from injury, too, so he's stuck it out as well.
Yeah. Well, good luck to those guys. Good luck to you, bud. SP Futures down 6.
Okay, NASA go Futures blue.
NASDAQ Futures down 14. Ricky, you want to go right to Kenny, or are we going to...
We got Kenny. We're here.
Kenny, you're right there, so we're going right to Kenny.
I am coming to you live from the New York Stock Exchange.
Hey, good for you.
Yeah, and I happen to be in New York, and I've got some guests that are coming in about 20 minutes.
You are the best, bud. So how much money did you make on your Tesla stock this week?
Unbelievable, right, with Tesla's?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Tesla Coinbase. Did you see what happened to Coinbase this week?
Yeah.
It's up nearly 90%. On the back of, on the back of the crypto thing, but really, I think in celebration of Gary Gensler's demise.
Yeah,
right?
Because
he'll be replaced
by
Trump.
I know, right? I understand that, but what is the new guy going to do that's so much better for Coinbase?
Well, because I think Gary Gensler's really been kind of pushing back on crypto and trying to put all kinds of regulations around it, and he's been slow to move. And I think. I think now the message that you're getting from Bitcoin and Coinbase is, that's going to change, is that while there will still be regulation, for sure, it's not going to nearly be as onerous as what Gensler has been trying to do, or at least, putting the brakes on it. So I think that's all a celebration. You kind of saw the group. PayPal's been up, and Block's been higher. Fiserv's been higher, all on the back of that. Robinhood, kind of all on the back of that excitement around crypto and around regulation, right?
Why should they be unregulated? Everybody else is.
No, it's not a matter of unregulated. It's just a matter of appropriate regulation, right? Gensler's been one that's been trying to put the brakes on it, the onerous regulation. And I think that's been the issue with, although Bitcoin has done fine. I mean, it's up 106% this year, but I think that Gensler has been kind of a roadblock for moving it along, right? And I think now the sense is that Trump will come in and there'll be a new SEC chair and they'll be more amenable to creating regulation that's appropriate, but they'll be pushing it through and making it happen. I think Gensler's been dragging his feet and that's been the problem.
I, as you know, I have a very serious problem with the Bitcoin, but no point in going into it today. As far as I'm concerned, they have no regulation. And I don't... The idea that money's lost in there and nobody has to get it to the state, or you can't find it if you lose. I mean, that's so different than any other investment.
Well, okay, I agree. Is it perfect yet? No, it's not perfect yet. Does it need some oversight? It absolutely needs oversight. But I think the message is that Gensler wasn't even willing to give it oversight. He was just trying to push it in the back, and not let it kind of evolve. I think that's what the message is. I think, but let's see. Look, I own a little bit of Bitcoin just so I'm in it. My feet are wet. And I got my toes in it a little bit. I don't own a ton of it. But I want to. I just kind of want to play with it as well, kind of get a sense and a feel of what's going on. So, I'm not complaining that it's trading at $87,000 right now. And so there it is.
I got it. I just the thing that, as you know, one of the things that always is a thorn up my behind is how people in my industry, your industry, are very regulated, and other people seem to wander around and don't get regulated at all. Which is, nice. I guess I don't simple rules like if you were an account at PTI and we couldn't find you for 3 months, the clearing firm's going to get your money out of here and give it to the state, and we're going to put it there for your family, whoever the hell happens to know.
Right.
At Bitcoin, the idea that you bought a Bitcoin 10 years ago and you lost your password, that nobody ever gets it, Kenny, I'm way too old of a cat to be screwed by a kitten. I mean,
okay, listen, I hear you, which is what I'm saying to you. I don't think it's perfect yet, and I don't think that, and I do think it needs some kind of regulation to prevent that stuff from happening. But I think that the sense is that Gensler was kind of pushing back against that. I think the industry is willing and able to kind of, you know, regulate themselves properly, and I think that's going to happen. I think that's what the market's telling you is going to happen, right?
Well, I mean, I don't own
a lot of it by any stretch. I just own some to keep my toes wet and to feel it. So it's not going to change my life one way or the other.
I just, when you talk about the market stuff, and by the way, you got a much better feel for it. You're staying on the New York Stock Exchange floor, for God's sake.
Yeah.
I brought out on Friday, probably didn't listen, but no, I did a history of your hero, Tricky Dick. No, he's not your hero. Dick Nixon's wage and price controls.
Yep.
Which probably was one of the worst economic policies ever hit this country, and for three solid days the market went straight up.
Yeah.
So, you know, you can't always, the market loves it. Okay. Maybe they do, maybe they don't.
Well,
you know?
Well, that's right. Maybe they do and maybe they don't. So, listen, I think a lot of the action that we've seen in the last week has been more of a relief rally. Relief, really, that the election is over, that there is an answer, that there's been, you know, a definitive answer made. Like it or not, the fact is a definitive result happened, and it happened quickly. I think a lot of people were expecting this to drag out for days, if not weeks, especially if it was close, all kinds of challenges. None of that happened, and so therefore I think really what the market is celebrating is that, you know, it was so definitive that there's no challenge to it, and it's time to move on. I think that's really what the market's celebrating. Look, do I think that stocks have been taken to overbought levels? Absolutely. I said it on Friday, I said it again yesterday. RSI, you know, all the indexes are kissing the upper limits of the RSI, suggesting that they're all overbought. So there needs to be a pullback. And don't forget, from November 5th to November 6th, the market gapped open by 80 points. So there's a big hole in the chart that at some point needs to be filled, which means the market's got to come back down, fill that gap, and then start to move. So while I love the fact that the market's up and I'm participating and all my clients are doing well, just like your clients, it's fine. But let's not get so excited that we think this is never going to end.
Well, what part of it? You know, of course, nobody, we're not supposed to even talk about this in today's world, but what part of it is the ridiculous increase in the money supply in the last 4 months, maybe an attempt to keep Trump out? I don't know.
Yeah, well,
now it's pouring right into the market.
Right. So you and I talk about that, you know, almost every week. I agree with you. I think that is a problem. I think that has to be fixed. But at the moment, that is what it is, right? They've done that. And I do think, to your point, they did it to try to keep the market steady going into what was, you know, considered a very contentious, chaotic election. And so I think they did it to kind of help stabilize the markets. That doesn't make it right, but that's what I think they did, right? So now what do they do now? Do they keep feeding the beast or not? That's going to be the question.
I think they're... You know, you're not on CNBC anymore, but all day long, all they do is talk about the Fed's dual mandate.
Yeah.
My opinion, their number one thing now is maintain the wealth bubble. And I don't know how anybody, I don't see how anybody can debate that, really.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I think you're right. I hate to say it, but I think you're right.
Hey, is New York doing any more business?
So here's the deal. New York now does about 18 to 20% of all the volume that trades. So if we're trading 8 billion shares a day, you know, New York's doing about 18 to 20% of that volume. The rest of the volume takes place in, you know, the other 9 exchanges that exist or in the alternative venues, you know, all the dark pools that exist. But, you know, the New York Stock Exchange is no longer at the, you know, they're not executing the bulk of the flow anymore. But that's a direct result of kind of market structure. And a lot of that's a direct result of what happened after 9/11 and that forced that change, right? Because remember, prior to 9/11, the New York Stock Exchange was the central marketplace, but it became very clear to everyone after that event that we needed to do something else to secure and stabilize the system, which is why now, you know, the New York Stock Exchange still exists. It's one of the 10 exchanges, but the other exchanges, you know, are all automated. They trade in the cloud, and so a lot of the volume goes there, right?
That's an exceptionally nice way of putting it. I could say a lot different. Hey, I have a question for you. On the New York Stock Exchange, can you trade within the penny?
You can no on the New York you can only trade in pennies on New York. So 1 cent, 2 cents, 3 cents. On the dark pools is where you can trade in sub pennies.
Well,
so if somebody sees something traded, you know, $119 spot 1, 2, 3, 4, that traded in a dark pool. If it trades at 12 cents or 11 cents or 9 cents, it traded on most likely on one of the exchanges. Doesn't have to be the New York Stock Exchange, but all the exchanges trade in two decimal places. It's the dark pools that trade in sub decimals. So
if you change that rule, the New York Stock Exchange, you get 40% of their business back.
Well, I probably, but they're, you know, I'm not sure why the exchanges only trade in two decimal places. I don't understand.
Because they don't want people to get a preference. They're actually a marketplace. They don't want people to show the order. They don't want payment for order flow.
Yeah. Okay. Well, so there you go. So then, so that's how it happens. But so the exchange today executes about 18 to 20% of the total volume.
It's got to be mostly. It's got to be on the opening, right?
Opening and close.
Yeah.
Opening and close. Because during the day, you know, the there's no more people, so all the action gets done by computers, and the computers just route to where the best bid and best offers are. And so, you know, they spray the system looking for, in the dark pools, since you can't see them, right? Because the dark pools are not lit. The New York Stock Exchange is lit. You see the bid, you see the offer. In a dark pool, you can't see the bid and the offer. You don't know if there's a better bid or a better offer until you go there and test it. And the way you do that is all the technology, you know, breaks these orders up and sprays the market to find out where the action is, right? It all might be taking place in a dark pool. And if that's the case, you'll find it out once you spray the system and you figure out which dark pool's got the volume in it, where it's trading, and that's how it ends up.
Do you still have a specialist? You must have a specialist at the post to do the opening, right?
So there are specialists at the post now called designated market makers. There's a fraction of what used to be, because one guy can now manage, you know, 150 stocks because it's all computerized. Yes, but they are here. They stand here. They manage their algos. You know, they come in here. They'll set up their system pre-opening based on what they think the market's going to do, or what the news is, or how the market's going to react. They'll set their algorithms in their trading systems to reflect that sense, and then they'll just let it go. Now, they can change it on the fly during the day. If something changes, they can adjust their algorithms. But for the most part, once they set them, they really just kind of sit here and just watch them and make sure that
there's no
crash.
Where, if somebody has a standing order, where is that?
So the standing order, so if I take an order and I put it into the system, I'm trying to buy Coca-Cola, it's in my system, right? It doesn't exist. I'll put some on the book at the New York Stock Exchange. I might put some in a dark pool. Again, I'll do the same thing. I'll test all the other markets because the technology from the floor allows me to test the other exchanges as well as the dark pools, while also representing myself here at the New York Stock Exchange.
Well, you're
it really rests. It rests in my handheld computer, and then from there, I can send it wherever I want. Any one of the exchanges looking for.
So there's no. I mean, if I'm looking at IBM here trading tool 1101. So if I have a client and I want to put in an offer at 212.
Yeah.
That no longer sits on the New York Stock Exchange floor.
Well, no, it does. It'll sit on the New York Stock Exchange, but it'll sit up higher at 212. It's not. It's outside where the market's trading. So
right.
It will. If you send it to the exchange, it'll sit on the book at 212.
Okay, fair enough.
You're gonna see it, right? You won't see it until it starts trading at 212. If it trades at 212, if it never trades there, then you get a nothing done.
What do you
mean?
Right? It's going to trade. It goes up every day. It'll go there.
Come well, understood. I own IBM, so I love the fact that it goes up every day.
Yeah, I mean, IBM has to be one of the strongest stocks this year.
Yeah, it's been a great. Yeah, it's been. It has been underappreciated in their in terms of what they're really doing in the AI space. I've owned it for a while. I've owned it for a couple of years, and I think I started buying it down in the low hundreds. It's fine. It's great.
So we're gonna lower corporate taxes, and we're not gonna worry about the deficit, eh?
Apparently, that seems to be at least a chatter. Now, whether or not that ultimately happens, look, someone's got to start to pay attention to all the money we're spending. And you know what's going to force it? What's really going to force that is what happens to yields, right? What happens to in the bond market? And are yields going to spike up to 5, 6, 7%? Because that's going to then wake somebody up and say, well, we got to stop all the spending because we can't afford it.
When how many times, I mean, I hope you're not hanging around in bars and so forth, but it doesn't seem like every single person has, especially if you're a Trumper, has some idea of what Trump was going to do to benefit them. It's like they know the guy personally, and yet I don't know if the guy's going to do anything like that.
But yeah, well, I think there was a real sense based on what he was talking about, based on prior policies, based on kind of, you know, messages that he was sending to the market about regulation, about, you know, energy, about green versus brown energy, what he wanted to do with that. And so I think people had the sense. And that's why I think we've seen this rally after the fact has been this move into what people would consider the Trump trade, right? Think sectors that will benefit as a result of having him at the helm. Now, we'll see. I think some of that, like I said, is just excitement. I do expect, you know, the market will pull back at some point and then really start to kind of figure out what's really going to happen. What are they going to be able to push through and not push through? I think it's been very, very interesting that he announced that woman now as his chief of staff, which is the first time a woman's been in that position. But now look what's happened.
What's her expected lifespan there?
I don't know. You know, something. She seems like a tough woman, and she seems like she can control him, or at least that's what it appears. But look what's happened in the last 2 days. They've already made a handful of announcements on, you know, Secretary of State and EPA and Elise Stefanik as the ambassador to the UN. All these things. So clearly, someone's been thinking about it. They've been managing it. And I think they said on the news today that this woman realizes that you don't have 4 years, you got 2 years, because you got the midterm elections, and a lot can happen in the midterms. So if they're going to push this stuff through, if they're going to cut taxes, corporate taxes and lower taxes, and, you know, do all this stuff, they got to do it the first 2 years, because you never know what's going to happen after the midterms hit, right?
Well, you also know he's a lame duck coming in, which doesn't usually happen.
He is a lame duck coming in, which is why I think, you know, her response is, look, we got to get stuff done in the first 2 years when we have control. And I suppose she's right. The other side would do the same thing.
Well, there's no question that he is, in one man's opinion, boondoggled an amazing part of the population.
Yep.
Question is if it doesn't come to fruition very quickly, how soon will that leave? One of my buddies last night, well, an acquaintance, not a buddy, comes up and he says, the drop in gas prices here in Chicago, is that because of Trump? And I said, well, not exactly. I mean, you do realize that oil is, we're pumping record amounts of oil. Oh, that can't be true. Well, it is.
We are. No, well, we are pumping record.
No, that can't be true. I mean, the Democrats have killed oil. No, they haven't. We have more oil being drilled now than ever. So yep. why is the price of gas down? I said, well, I think we came off the summer blend.
Yeah.
What's that? What do you mean, what's that? I mean, the amount of lack of knowledge in the average, you know, I guess because you and I do this for a living, Kenny, it's stunning when you hear people say stuff like that.
Yeah. Well, listen, so it's not their business. You know, it's not what they do for a living, so they don't necessarily know the ins and outs. But you also can't argue against the fact that the dollar has now surged. And, you know, a rising dollar is going to put pressure on commodities. Right. Oil is a commodity. Gold, look what's happened to gold. Gold is cratered now. I think part of that.
Why do you
gold.
Suppose that hasn't affected Bitcoin the same way?
Because I don't look at Bitcoin as a commodity like I do gold and oil and silver and copper and all that stuff, right? I don't view Bitcoin as a commodity. I view Bitcoin as an asset class that is, you know, kind of in its infancy stages. That's got a lot of promise ahead.
Why not? Would you think I'm wrong if I say it's a fake stock?
I don't think you're wrong by calling it. You know, I don't really know how to classify it. They call
that's
it.
I don't either. It's my. It's like a tulip. Well, you don't get the tulip.
Yeah. Well, I guess we're gonna find out about that, right?
Yeah. Well, I hope not in one day, because I think there's a lot of money in there, boy.
Which is why I don't. You know, I own enough of it just to keep my toes wet. But nothing. If the place blows up, it's not gonna kill me. So I just want to be in it a little bit, to feel it, to play with it, to kind of see what happens with it, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's going to be really interesting, but the amount of different things that a lot of the people who supported Trump think are going to happen on day one, there's going to be some disappointment. I wonder where that's going to go.
For sure there's going to be disappointment, which is why I think that woman, the chief of staff, Summerall, or whatever her name is, her married name, I don't know what it is, I think, which is why she's going to be fairly aggressive, saying we got to get this and this done, and so, you know, stop the bullshit, let's just move on.
Well, I agree, because I mean, if if he starts firing all these people 8 months from now and starts all over again, I don't think he's got a real problem. But no, I don't think he's going to do that this time. No, I really don't.
I don't think he is either. I think the second time around, you know, he's learned from his mistakes. I do think everything I read about this woman, she's a very tough woman, and I think he's had her there in that position, knowing he was going to put her in that position. I think she's been working behind the scenes all along to get this started.
I'm a little uncomfortable with the some of this incredible relationship between him and Musk, where he was on the phone call with the Ukrainian guy and stuff. I got an issue with that.
I'm not so sure why he was on that phone call. Like, I agree with you. I'm not necessarily sure that Musk should have been on that phone call. But again, is Musk going to be an advisor to the president?
And here's a guy, Kenny. You're Italian Boston, right? And I'm half Italian South Side. I don't know how you take $9 billion from one party and change parties. That's only done by a chief executive officer to think he's above the law. I mean, I could never, you know, get. You know, $9 billion from you as governor, and then in the next race, say I'm for the other guy. I couldn't be. That's how you end up getting knees broken in the old days. But thank God that doesn't happen today. But I mean, you just wonder what does he expect to get out of the guy?
He's no dummy. Let's be honest.
Yeah,
he's no dummy, right? So what does he expect to get out of him? I think he expects to get some insight into how. Look, he's going to end up being that, what they call him, he's going to go through the audit chair or the whatever he's going to. He's going to go through all the agencies. He's going to figure out where all the waste is, because you and I both know there is a ton of waste in those agencies. A ton of waste.
He's going to, how many people he's going to fire to try and make up for the $9 billion that he got?
Well, let's just see. I mean, listen, I suspect that when he gets done, there will be some job losses for sure. Because I'm sure there's a lot of government waste there. The same way when he walked into Twitter.
So sure that you can just go in and fire people that you've hired and so forth with the budget and the president has signed, some of which Trump has signed. I don't know if you just walk in and fire people. I don't know. I'd have to find out.
Yeah. Well, I don't know either. But I guess we're going to find out over the course of the next couple of months. We'll see how that plays out.
You know, the only president I should check this, but the only president I think that actually had a decrease in federal employees when he was in office was Clinton.
Clinton. Yeah, I think you're right.
Nobody on the right would ever even concede that that's possible, but I think it's true.
Right, but all that means is that, you know, the government just wasn't growing, right? They just weren't hiring, they weren't increasing, and so there was this natural attrition. People who just left and they weren't being replaced, which makes sense, right? Maybe that's the way you cut that waste.
Kenny, you know, we got like zero time, but can you, in the back of your mind, I was going through all this oil stuff yesterday because, of course, all these people are at me about oil production that don't seem to know what they're talking about.
Right.
I am stunned. Why do you think that during the Bush administration, when those guys were, you know, up to behind oil, for God's sake, that we actually had a decrease in production over his 8 years? How could that even have happened? Was he that tight with the Arabs? What could possibly have caused that?
I don't know, and I'd have to go back and kind of revisit that because
we were down to 4 million barrels a day. Now we're 13.5.
13.5 million barrels a day and going up. Quite honestly.
And we were down to high fours when Bush was here.
Right,
that's like a third.
Right, but so was part of that was the current demand at that time when Bush was president, and the Arabs certainly had plenty of oil to supply, and so maybe he was kind of more in bed with the Arabs, and I don't remember the price being out of control when Bush.
I don't either.
Out of control.
No, I don't either. I mean, obviously we're in a much stronger place in terms of today, where that would, you know, that's why every time the Arabs say they're going to do something, it doesn't do anything to the price.
Right.
I mean, I'm much happier with the way things are today than then.
Yeah, agreed. But if the U.S., if he does what he wants to do and he starts to drill, baby, drill, and then we start to produce even more, we'll become the swing producer, which we were under him the first administration. The U.S. was the swing producer.
Now why are we going to drill more than we're already drilling? We're drilling more than he... We're drilling more than when he was here.
Right, so he wants to drill more to do what? Bring the price of energy down. The price of energy is going to help inflation, right? Because transportation costs will come down. Utility bills should go lower, right? That's all a direct result of having plenty of energy.
All right, but so now, one of the things that I believe is that the industry is bigger than the president. So if he does something to get the price down to $50 instead of $70.
Yep.
He could be Harry Houdini. You're not going to drill anymore. You're going to drill less because less.
No, but well, agreed. But listen, here's what I think. Here's what I think could possibly happen, and it happened. It happened really the last time. The Saudis will get pissed off at some point that oil's not going up. Right, it's going to go down, and they make money. Oil could be trading at $10, and they're still making money while the rest of the world is not. Right, and so if the Saudis get really pissed off and they flood the market with oil, oil price will collapse. Certainly, gas prices will come down, but they'll hurt like they did the producers, because I think the U.S. needs oil to be trading in the, you know, somewhere in the 40s for them to make money. Below 40s, I think they start to lose money. And if the Saudis get really annoyed at this,
well, they gotta be fat and happy at 67. I mean, it's not, yeah, not the same as 100, but it's still,
yeah,
pretty
good. Well, but they'd be happier at 100 for sure. You know, that's what they really, they wanted it at 80 plus is where they want it. The fact that 67 is certainly not hurting them. It's not, they're not getting as much as they want.
You know, Kenny, this may be a discussion for next week. I've actually read stuff that says that because of their amazing budget, including paying like 15th cousins a bunch of cash, that they're quote break even is like 85 or 90. Not to break even, not like you and I would cost account it. Like it takes them $5 to get out of the ground and they're selling it for whatever. Yeah. Then that part you and I might say, gee, it looks like they're making a lot of dough. But in their mind, to fund all the crap they want to fund, golf courses and, you know, all that kind of stuff, they yeah. think their break even is like 85. I don't see us getting there.
Yeah, no, I don't see us getting there at all. I don't see us getting there at all. I thought at the beginning of the year that we were going to see oil, you know, be plus 80, 90 in that range, but now I don't see it there at all.
All right, but enjoy yourself down there. One of these days we're going to get our tour. So
I told you. You let me know when you want to get your tour. So I'm happy to come back and do it. But listen, next Tuesday I'm not on with you because I'm going to be flying to San Francisco for the Schwab Conference. So I'm telling you now that I won't be available next Tuesday.
Now, do you have the private jet or are you like?
No, you idiot! I'm flying jet. A lot of
mail. I thought you were like Warren Buffett, where you just bought into that company and they send you a jet whenever you want one.
Goodbye.
See ya. S&P futures down 8, NASDAQ futures down 24. Very quick break. We'll be back with Professor Hal Snar.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hear ye, hear ye. The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air.
Womp, bomb, loom, bomb, lomp, bomp, bomp, toot-a-boot.
Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Ricky on the board. SP Futures down 8. NASDAQ Futures down 22. We're down a little more earlier. We're down for the first time in several days. But I don't see it down very much, and I don't know if it's going to stay here. Matter of fact, I think it probably won't. But do we have the professor?
Hey, what's up, Tom?
How are you, buddy?
Doing well.
Did you see the Saturday Night Live little skit regarding all the people that have made money? And the rich people, and they had to put a guy on there with a beard and a MAGA hat and a flannel shirt, and they said, "Don't worry, yours is coming next week." Are you in that group? Yours is coming.
I'll have to watch the rerun. I was watching the Washington State Cougars from 10:30 until freaking 1.
Wow!
I fell asleep. They're on the CW every.
What is
other?
What's the CW?
The one of the networks, the broadcast networks. Yeah,
well, isn't a. Boy, Fox and FX1 is picking up a lot of those games, aren't they?
Actually, they got Big Ten, don't they?
They got Big Ten, Fox.
Yeah, only if Washington's... When Washington State played Washington, it was on, I think, Peacock, NBC. Washington State home games are on the...
They're still in the Pac something, right?
Well, to Oregon State alumni and Washington State University alumni, we refer to it as the Tupac.
How many times you guys got to play each other? Just your 5 or 6?
Well, we're only playing once, so hopefully it goes our way.
So who? All right, so refresh my memory. Who's left in the Pac-10? You are the new guys already in there or what?
Well, we call it the Tupac, Tom. All right, the Tupac. That's what we call it.
But I thought you got like Boise State and Montana. I thought a bunch of other states got in there.
In Boise State. I think we're adding like, let's see, we're up to. I think seven teams, I think. We got one more to go before we're back to official conference size. We're in this two-year window. I think we added San Diego State. We added Boise State. And
was it Utah State? Somebody else in there. There's another state that got in there.
Yeah, Colorado State. And, man, I can't remember. I'm sorry.
Well, that's all right. I mean, I don't expect you to be able to roll them up. But they're, yeah, because you need eight. Matter of fact, that's how the Big Ten ended up with a hockey conference is they added Notre Dame as their eighth. Or Penn State is there, or somebody. Because they didn't have eight.
Yeah.
And I think you need...
Well, you know, the thing about the Pac... What we know is the Pac whatever, Pac X conference.
Yeah.
They didn't start using the word Pac or the initials Pacific Athletic Conference until like the 1960s. Before that, it was known as the Big Four, then the Big Six. And then when it added two more teams to get to eight, then it started calling itself the Pac Eight. And then it called itself the Pac 10 when it added Arizona State and Arizona. And then it, you know, added Utah and Colorado to become the Pac 12. But the interesting thing about conferences, I looked into the history of the Pac 12.
So Colorado's now, they're not a Big Ten. Now, where'd they go?
Who?
Colorado went where? They didn't go to Big Ten.
Colorado went to the Big 12.
Okay.
Yeah. Which doesn't have 12 teams.
Well, the Big Ten is like 50, don't they?
I think the Big Ten, if you look at the Big Ten's logo, it looks like the big has a 10 inside of it. I think they're going to phase out the 10 and just be called the Big Conference. And that's what's going to end up happening.
Well, the big eight used to be Nebraska, Oklahoma, those guys,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And, well, that's why when the Pac-12, when it was the Big Four and then it was the Big Six, it couldn't call itself the Big Eight because that was already taken.
Right.
So that's when they went from Big Six to Pac-8. Yeah.
Okay.
And then the funny thing about it is, man, money was always involved in college football. Because I think when they had this really weird name, like American Athletic Union or something, back in the 40s and 50s.
Hey, the AAU is still, it wasn't just weird.
Yeah.
They're still strong. They're not strong the way they were.
Yeah.
I mean,
but yeah, the four original members of the Pac-12, right? They were embroiled in a paying football players to play scandal, and they had to disband whatever the conference was named at the time. A year later, they came back. And at one point, Montana and Idaho were in with Washington State in what was called what was considered to be the conference of teams known as the Pac-12 today.
When I was a Ute, there was a big I wish I knew the history of this. It'd have to be somebody way older than us, but. The NCAA was a real competitor to the, was it the Amateur Athletic AAA? Was it?
Well, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about this weird name that these West Coast teams had in like the 40s and 50s. It was like five initials, and it didn't say something like PAC. It was like something weird, some weird.
I think my cousin went to Colorado. I think they were in the Big Eight when Nebraska and those guys, weren't they?
Yeah, yeah. That was
because he played in the Orange Bowl.
Yeah.
So it was great. The team went out there and did nothing but two-a-day practices and stuff, and all the hangers-on from the university ate shrimp and drank all week.
Yeah.
You want to be the hanger-on, not a player, I guess.
My research of the history of the Pac-12 revealed something interesting. The history of football conferences is one of constant churn.
When the Irish first played Southern Cal in like 1920-something, where they took the train out there,
yeah.
UCLA must have had a team. Berkeley had to have a team. Stanford probably had a team.
UCLA's pretty new. And I think it was like a branch campus of Berkeley because they had the same mascot and essentially the same colors. I think they also have the same fight song. One's called Bruins, one's called Bears. So I think when UCLA was set free of being a branch campus of University of California, which is now known as Berkeley, then it probably changed its name from Bears to Bruin.
Well, there's still eight.
Now they're independent universities. Well, I mean they're independent in the sense that the universities in North Carolina, the state universities in North Carolina, are independent. There's a university system president, but each university has its own chancellor.
Right, but when you apply now, you apply to one, and they tell you the one you get in.
Well, that's not the case in North Carolina.
No, but I mean, because the what's her name? Who are the? Yeah, this is gonna sound awful. Who are the two ladies that work for Clinton that were, I'll say, vertically challenged? One of them was Napolitano, the other one was Shapiro. One became
Napolitano became the like the university wide president,
right?
I think.
And the other one went to Miami, University of Miami, Florida, right? Became the chancellor down there.
Yeah, but University of Miami is like a private university, right?
But the reason why I kind of followed this down the chain because I've been trying to do my cost accounting stuff, and just because I do it on my own, why it interests me, I have no idea, but. There's actually a building, I think it's in Oakland, that has 300 people there that essentially runs the seven universities. It's Berkeley, it's UCLA, it's University, is it Fresno, or is Santa Barbara?
Fresno, California State University.
But there's Santa Barbara, is University of California.
Oh, Fresno State was added to the new Pac-12.
Okay, but I'm saying there's University of California, Los Angeles, there's University of California, Santa Barbara, University of California, Irvine. There's like six or seven or eight.
San Diego.
Yeah, there's six or seven or eight of them that, even though you're right, they're separate. They're not really separate because UCLA has an $11 billion budget, so they're separate in that regard. But somehow or another, this group in Oakland has some say over all of them. And I think if you apply, because one of my friend's kids did, if you apply out there, you can apply to Berkeley, and if you're not, you know, that's where I guess the smartest people get to go, but they'll say, "Oh no, Hal, you're accepted at University of California, Irvine," and you go,
"Oh really?
Yeah."
Oh,
so, I didn't know that. Yeah. So you apply to one place. Now, I guess if you could apply to Irvine, and I don't know if you're smarter, if they say no, you got to go to Berkeley. I'm not sure how that works, but I know it's one application.
Hmm. Which I didn't know that.
And so they're still sort of together. The thing that's even more bizarre is if you look at the whole system. The amount of indirect people to presidents is like 10 to 1 is the overhead. Hmm. What it cost their cost, whatever you want to call it, cost full in. This what is going to make anybody on the show that's listening is a cost accountant shudder and clench. They look at their cost. If you look at the amount of students divided in the entire amount of money spent, their cost per student is like $100,000.
Wow.
That's how much money they spent. Mm. Now, most of it's directly taxes. I mean, you didn't have to pay any tuition there for California citizen up to how many years ago? 5, 10, something like that? I mean, you paid fees, but wasn't it? And if you lived in L.A., you got to go to UCLA free, didn't you? I mean, you must have to pay your room and board and stuff, but.
I think that was the same way with the University of Texas system, right? In the 1970s.
Yeah, that's kind of all changed. Well, and then they decided, well, I mean, here it used to be real cheap to go to Illinois. And now, of course, you can't get into Illinois because they want people in Wisconsin and Michigan because they're paying, or Indiana. Right. So now, you know, they're playing all these games. You guys doing that in I don't know, I shouldn't ask you this. Is Carolina, you know, we're for University of California, North Carolina, but is North Carolina doing that? They only take people from South Carolina, so you got to pay more?
Well, I think there's a law that probably limits. I've only been here a year, and I've been, you know, busy trying to, and I've only been living in the state for, you know, my family's only been living in the state since August, so I've just been trying to get this health economics class built out. So I haven't really looked into it, but I think there's a law that kind of caps out-of-state registrations because of that issue. At Washington State and University of Washington, they're public universities, but you look at their tuition levels. It's like, I think their tuition for in-state makes them look like a private university. I don't think they subsidize the tuition of Washingtonians very much in the state of Washington. Well, because I had a cousin's son who applied to Washington State and University of Idaho, and he looked at Washington State and he was like, man, even the in-state people are paying extraordinary tuition. So he ended up going to University of Idaho instead.
Well, yeah, you could be doing it. There's a site, and I was on it. I one of the best sites I've ever was ever on. Now I think if you get there, they make you pay. It must be run by some university group or something. Every single university in the country, I mean every single one, and there's like
I didn't realize there's like 100 colleges in Illinois, or 70. I mean, it's a huge amount. I mean, these small colleges and so forth. And every one of them in there give you their tuition every single year since at least 2000 going back. Room and board and the how much in-state versus out-of-state.
One thing that people need to be aware of is some universities require students to live in the dorm. So
Notre Dame
for
did.
The first 2 years.
Notre Dame did.
Yeah. Now, that wasn't the case where I went to school. I went to school out of high school at Lewis Clark State College, and they didn't have any dorms on campus. So they had dorms, but they didn't have very many of them.
Well, DePaul's got maybe
I just stayed with my parents.
Three dorms, and they would need, 20.
Yeah.
So, but no, I mean, a lot of the state schools require you to live in a dorm freshman year.
Yeah.
I mean, freshman year is pretty tough. If all of a sudden you got to get four roommates and you're paying house expenses and getting a rental apartment, that's pretty tough for a freshman.
Well, it's not very tough for a guy I went to church with in Osgood, Idaho, outskirts of Idaho Falls, Idaho. Him and his wife are accountants, and they do very well. And they bought a house in Pocatello for their kids. And so their kids would live in the house.
That. Well, you gotta,
and that was cheaper than paying the.
Yeah, but you got to be a one percenter for your parents to buy you a house, for God's sake.
Well, he's an accountant and his wife's an accountant, and they were making really good money.
My mom didn't say, hey, you don't want to live in a dorm, I'll buy you a house in South Bend. I never had that option. I mean, I know she didn't.
I had to live with my parents. And then when I got out of the Navy, I was living with my mom and my stepfather, and I was 25, and I was like, I can't live with my mom anymore. So instead of living in my old bedroom of my mom and stepfather's house, it was a better option for me to live under my brother Rod's pool table until their lease on their two-bedroom apartment was up and we could rent a house together.
Well, down in Indiana, for whatever reason, I went down there to party with my buddies from Indiana one weekend. Thank God I got out of it alive. They all stayed in... There's a Catholic church, and behind the Catholic church, these kids were all from a cathedral in Indianapolis. They're all Catholic school. So there was in back of the church was a big long, like funky looking building that had maybe 15 dorm rooms.
And oh, really?
You could stay there, and there wasn't any food or anything, but everybody had a job. You had to clean pews, 15 through 30 once a week, and you got to stay there for free.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, I would have done that.
Well, except. I don't know. It was a Saturday night, and there was a party, and I don't know where everybody else went to another party. And so I make my way back to the place. Of course, it's late or early, depending on how you look at it. Right? And the doors are all
locked. Well, if you're a priest or a mom and dad, it's late. If you're a young kid at the party, it's early.
Well, it was late enough to where the place was locked.
Oh, man.
So I'm sitting there, well, now where do I go? So what do you do? I'm snoozing in the car, and people start going to church and stuff, looking at me. It was bad. But the door.
Well, you could probably smell the party on you through your window, right?
The windows were open, but but it was finally the door
was
open.
Smell the vodka.
Oh God, it was just beer, but still it wasn't all that trash. But I couldn't get in. But anyway, there a lot of kids lived in the back of this church, so there, people find a way, I guess.
Yeah.
The economy, everybody, God, you don't even have to. You don't have to buy a beer. People immediately start telling you what Trump's going to do. That's going to be good for them. I mean, the guy could be Solomon and squared, and he's going to disappoint in the next 3 weeks because everybody thinks he's doing something for them personally.
Honestly, I don't want either party doing anything for me. I just want them to leave the hell alone.
Well, that's not going to happen.
Yeah,
that's not going to happen.
I don't want. See, the difference between me and other people. Is I kind of think these people think of these politicians as these god kings that they need to be worshipped. It want them to provide them with stuff. Honestly, I don't want them to provide with anything.
You don't want them to provide the other guy with stuff who's competing against you either.
Yeah, I don't want any special protections. I don't want my job protected by a tariff. I don't want my job protected by laws that. Don't allow me as a non-union worker to work at a company that just 86 is union workforce. I don't want those kinds of protections. I don't want the protections that, keep product out of the United States. I just don't want any of that. I wish they would just do nothing. I wish they would just be happy collecting their paycheck.
Well, you and I have this discussion all the time. It's too late for them to do nothing.
I know. It is. Yeah. Yeah.
Now, the question is, how little can you do? Yeah. I'm with you on that, but it's way too late
once you give up the property for the railroads and make a monopoly, it's too late to say laissez-faire, because it's not laissez-faire. Yeah. You just made it not laissez-faire, right?
Yeah, I voted the way I did because I like the anti-war. You know, if the Democrats were anti-war, I might have voted for them, but they're not. They're the party of the state. They're the party of censorship. They're the party of war.
Well, how they got to be the party of censorship? If you would have asked me 15 years ago who would be the party of censorship, I would have said the right. Yeah. Now it's flipped. Well, how did that ever happen? But it did happen. I mean, I'm not going to argue.
Well, they're also the party of not having fun. I mean, I watch shows by conservatives and libertarians, and they're having fun. They're telling jokes that, boy, howdy, if it gets on Twitter, the advertiser is going to stop advertising their shows. So, you know, I don't know when it happened, but it sounds like the people having fun in the United States are conservatives and libertarians, and the Republicans, who were the people not having fun in the 80s, have become the Democrats. Well, they don't want you to have fun. They police you. You like something, now all of a sudden you got to apologize, but that apology never goes far enough. Look at the girl from the singer from the Pussycat Dolls. She liked a Jesus hat that was in the image of MAGA. I don't remember what it said, but she's like being forced to apologize, and the people that are forcing her to apologize, they're not going to accept her apology.
There's a million lunatics that don't seem to have a job. All they do is sit there and pick at people all day.
My advice to her is just ignore it. Ignore it. Like what you like.
When your life is getting out in front of people and telling them what you're doing, and then they don't like what you're doing, you can't ignore it because you're the ones that put yourself there.
Yeah. I've recently become a very big fan of Justine Bateman from Family Ties. Boy, howdy, she's got a lot of cojones, man. I'm telling you. She's on Twitter, and I've been reading her post for like 3 or 4 days. And I agree with her 100%. Look, let me live my life the way I want to live it. You live your life the way you live it. And don't worry about what other people are doing.
The problem with that is people want to live the life they want to live, always want to affect somebody else.
Yeah. Why do I have to live your life? Why do I have to live... Why do I have to say your narratives? Why can't I think for myself?
Why can't I have an opinion? Nobody wants to do that.
Well, I tell you, Twitter was a place in 2020 where you had to agree with the state. You had to agree with the state. Otherwise, you were dialed down and canceled. And it was brutal. I almost went nuts in 2020 because I would post something and nobody would see it. And I guarantee you, Twitter at the time was their algorithm was probably unfollowing people who had followed me. I don't think anybody that followed me back then would have clicked unfollow Hal because of what he's saying, because they agreed with me. Most of them were libertarian leaning. And I saw my follower list shrink by 300. I felt the dial. I mean, they really turned me down. And it was unbelievable. And the thing that makes people angry is not being heard.
Well, but
want to make somebody mad.
Yeah, but this whole thing, let's go to break. Let's talk about this. Because the idea, I mean, it used to be, you and I weren't here. You had to actually get a letter, walk down to the town square, and tack the thing up there.
Yeah.
Everybody saw you. They knew it was your letter. This idea that somehow... somebody's sitting there eating bonbons or smoking dope or whatever he's doing in his house.
In his mom and dad's basement.
Gets to publish nationwide, and everybody has to read his crap. Does that mean years ago if I wrote into the Tribune?
I don't have to read it.
No, what I'm saying.
I don't have to read it.
But
that guy is trying to silence me.
But I'm saying that you're forcing, I don't think if I wrote in, I don't care what it is, to the Tribune or the Sun-Times or the Daily News, they weren't obligated to put my letter and publish it, were they? Why would they be?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know where people all of a sudden have a right to have their blather out there with no effort.
I think they have a right to do it. I just don't like...
They have a right to try, but I have a right to say no. I have a right to tell somebody you can't come on my show.
Yeah, exactly. But I think people have the right to put stuff out there.
By the way, I've never done that.
I just don't think a small portion of people have the right to end people's lives and unemploy them.
Well, then you reach the point where...
okay, if I'm marketing myself as a place where everybody gets to put their stuff there, then everybody becomes everybody I like. Well, then that's a problem. I would agree with that. SP Futures, that's what I'm saying. Once you walk down this road, what are the rules? SP Futures down four.
Remember
and
what
SP
the left said
six.
About the Bible being in the hotel room. If you don't, you know, about porn being on the TV. If you don't like it, don't watch it. If you don't like what I wrote, don't read it.
By the way, I got a great don't story comment. About you Utah dudes in porn when we come back. Be right back, Stocks and Jocks. Okay.
Individuals and businesses with tax problems, listen carefully. Do you feel like you're losing control of your finances? If you owe over $10,000 in back taxes or have unfiled tax returns, we can help you take back control. The IRS is the largest and most aggressive collection agency in the world, and they can seize your bank accounts, garnish your paycheck, close your business, and file criminal charges. Take control of your tax problem now by calling the experts at U.S. Tax Shield and take advantage of the Fresh Start program and new laws that allow us to negotiate a settlement for the lowest amount possible. Our Better Business Bureau A-rated team of tax attorneys and enrolled agents can stop collections and get you protected so you can take control of your financial future. Call now for a free case review and a low price guaranteed quote to get you protected today. Call now. 800-388-4901. That's 800-388-4901. U.S. Tax Shield. 800-388-4901.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now.
Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howe. Ricky on the board. SP Futures down 3. NASDAQ Futures down 3. We're creeping up is sort of, we sort of predicted, but it wasn't all of a sudden. It didn't take a whole lot of brains to figure that out because we've been up like every day. Individual stocks, we've got Honeywell up 19. Wow, there's a number. That's 8%. They're doing something good here. Home Depot is also up 7. They had earnings. Nobody really down on the Dow here. Matter of fact, a couple of cents here and there, but not much. Over in Europe, they were down. Let's see if we're still down. The European markets fall as mining stocks slide. DAX down 213, 1.1%. They were up like 1.4% yesterday. FTSE down 73.9. CAC around down 100, 1.3. So they're turning the other way here. We're not yet. We haven't yet. I'm not saying we will. Nikkei down 157.4%. Hang Seng down 580. It's almost 3%. 2.8. Shanghai down 48, 1.4. So no joy if you're long in the Asian markets today. None whatsoever. The bonds now up 8 basis points, 4.39. The Bund unchanged, 2.33. 10-year Japanese 1.01, so they're up another couple basis points. Oil up 45 cents, but still low end of the range, 68.49, the range being roughly 67 to 74, somewhere in there. Brent up 45 cents, 92.30. Natural gas down 4 cents, 287. Arbob up a penny, 197, to under $2. Gold, which has been getting clobbered, is actually up 420 today, a little dead cat bounce. 26.21. Silver up 19 cents, 30.81. Pretty good move in silver, but still way below the 32-ish it was. Silver hasn't gotten bashed quite as bad as gold here, I don't think. Copper down 6, down 5 cents, 417. The U.S. dollar, which has been really strong, is strong again today. The pound is down to 106. The euro is down to 106. The pound is down to 128. And the yen is at 154 yen to the dollar. It was 143 a couple of months ago. It's a big move there as well. Crypto down 1667, taking a breather. It approached 90,000, now it's 85,449. Ricky Gart, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports, Bulls, Hawks, Bears.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Morning, Chief. It's currently 7:37 a.m. here in Chicago. 46 degrees right now with a high of 50. Mostly cloudy and breezy this morning, followed by clouds giving way to some sun. Tonight will have a low of 41 degrees. Phoenix, Arizona, 52 degrees right now with a high of 76. Sunshine and very pleasant. Tonight will be clear and cool with a low of 48 degrees. Traffic in Chicago. Inbound Kennedy from Monroe's. We're looking at 44 minutes. 60 minutes. Inbound Edens from Lane Cook. Inbound Eisenhower from Wolf, 46 minutes. Inbound Dan Ryan from 95th, 30 minutes, and Stevenson from 24 to the Dan Ryan, 44 minutes. NFL Week 11 is here. Thursday, November 14, we have Commanders at Eagles, 7:15 p.m. And this Sunday, November 17, we have Packers at Bears, 12 p.m. And Cardinals are on bye week this week. Lastly, NBA. Yesterday, the Bulls lose to the Cavaliers, 113 to 119. And today, we have the Suns playing Utah Jazz at 8 p.m. Back over to you, Chief.
Hal, whenever you talk about an industry, even no matter what the industry is, you, I suspect, have the same immediately attraction to it because the economics, no matter what it is, whether it's like kind of a street gang or a business or whatever, the economics almost kind of work the same way, right? I mean, they sort of do. I'm not saying that, you know.
The government cartelizes.
Well, I'm just saying, but even left to its own devices, most businesses, most industries kind of have the same sort of economic. You all got customers, you all got inputs, you all got, right? I mean, well, I was watching this thing on the History Channel.
And the big ones want the government to be their partner, right?
You know, you remind me so much of Milton Friedman. It's scary. Milton Friedman says the only real way to maintain a monopoly is to have the government maintain it for you.
Yeah, it's the only way because over long run,
yeah,
a monopoly will provide roughly, not very good service. I mean, they don't have to because they're the only game in town, so they're not going to provide the service. They're, you know, focused on, you know, their revenue stream from their monopoly, so they're not going to see the disruption coming. They're not going to see the new thing that comes and disrupts their market, and they get displaced. And that's the problem with the public school system, especially in the inner cities, is they essentially have a monopoly in their neighborhoods. The parents can't afford private schools. The city probably is limiting the number of charter schools less than what the market would bear. So these parents are forced to send their kids to these public schools who are being paid from the state, not the parents. And so that makes the administrators accountable to the state, not the parents.
There are some natural monopolies. I mean, yeah. Certainly if you dig a canal, the people who run the canal, you're not going to dig another canal next to it. Or there's, you know, the railroads, there's one tunnel. You have to wait 50 years till there's a road, right? I mean, so there are natural monopolies.
But over the long run, those monopolies fall apart. Right?
The difference between...
Unless government prevents a competitor from coming in.
I'm going to take my Hal shot. The long run is different for guys like you and Milton Friedman and the Ivory Tower than it is.
Well, if you have kids, there's a long run.
But
if you don't have kids,
if you're sitting there by yourself and say, oh, the railroad's screwing me, but that's okay. 80 years from now, there'll be competition. It doesn't exactly cut it for a regular person. Now, for you guys, the Ivory Tower, it's okay. You know,
I'm not in the Ivory Tower. I'm not allowed in the Ivory Tower, Tom. I'm not even allowed in.
One of these days, there'll be somebody ponying up money for the somebody chair, and Hal Snarr is going to be endowed there, and one of these days a Nobel Prize is going to come walking your way.
I don't think so. I mean, I think Rothbard deserved it more than Hayek, honestly. And if Rothbard can't win it, there's no way I'm going to win it because I'm never going to write as much as Rothbard.
Well, Friedman didn't win it for the Monetary History of the United States, which is an incredible piece of work.
It is, especially given the technology of the day.
Yeah, he won it how many years later for something else?
Yeah.
I mean, I forget what he even won it for.
I think he won it for the same reason Edmund S. Phelps kind of won it for. I think this natural unemployment theory, right? This macroeconomic unemployment theory, where you have this augmented Phillips curve. It's not a trade-off between inflation and unemployment. It's a trade-off between the change in inflation over unemployment. I think that's kind of why both him and Phelps won it. Phelps won it in 2008, but they came to the same conclusion regarding that model in the 1960s about the same time. I think that's the reason why they
won. What happens if you lie about the inflation? Does it still work?
Well, I think, I don't know. If you use M2, if you use M2's growth rate smooth through seasons and whatnot, I think that's a better measure of inflation. I think it's currently running about 3.8.
No, it's up the last 4 months. It's like 5.5. What do you think the market's going?
Oh, really?
Up?
Yeah.
That's why the market's going up, not because of Trump. I'm sorry.
I have old data on the M2. I think my M2 is, whatever.
You're always a month behind.
Yeah.
But take July through September, I think it's 5.5% or something. You think the market's going up because of Trump? Maybe not. Maybe it's because of
I think the Fed made credit cheaper. From it, not the bond market, but it made credit borrowing from the Fed cheaper, which increases borrowing. And we know that increase in lending results in money creation through multiplication, right? Well, to the money multiplier.
Right. What a multiplier, sure.
So when they lower the federal funds rate, there's more institutional borrowing, and I think a lot of this money's flowing into the people who are buying these large organizations that are buying gold and Bitcoin and whatnot. And
well, they're buying stock. I mean, it goes right in the stock. It always goes in the stock market.
Yep. And then you it's going into Bitcoin too.
But it's even worse in the stock market. When I say worse, because you can margin borrow easier in the stock market than you can for Bitcoin. I think. I guess.
Well,
you can
people can buy Bitcoin with a credit card.
That's danger.
Yeah,
danger,
it is.
Danger,
yeah.
Will Robinson.
Yeah.
Anyway, you don't hear my Utah porn story, do you?
Yeah, I've heard before about Provo.
Yeah, isn't that wild?
Well, wait, when you ban something, what happens? It doesn't destroy the demand. When you ban a product, there's still demand, and people are going to figure out how to get it, right?
Well, we are still half Puritan in this country. It's kind of, I couldn't believe it when I first went to Europe, and every corner is nothing but magazines, and nobody gave a crap. You know, well, here it's a huge deal.
Yeah.
You know, there we took the train from where the hell did we go, from Vienna to Frankfurt, and all you saw was people sunbathing in the raw. And here it's like, God, you're putting people in jail for that. They never cared. Anyway.
Well, they're not showing their pubic areas, right? They're sunbathing without a shirt, right?
No, I'm talking. What did Radar O'Reilly? Nakedity.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Oh well, okay.
We were lecturing in the boardroom in the Credit and Stalt in Austria. This building that had been there for God knows how many years. This bank.
Let's just say I prefer it in the United States, where I don't have to see a guy's junk.
No. But everybody went out the night before, so Jan and I are, Dr. J and I are lecturing, and everybody's, you know, we were pretty bad shape. Some of the people in the room were green because they went out after we went home. And so they had, it's hotter than hell in there, you can imagine. So I opened up this window that hadn't been open probably since for a century. Things creaking open, but we needed some air. And across on the balcony, these three girls. And I say, wait, but we got to stop class. Everybody's got to come look out the window. Anyway, that was the old days. We had no girls in the room, so it was okay. Girls across, they didn't mind. They were all waving at everybody.
Where was that at? That was in Germany?
No, this is in Vienna.
Oh, Vienna, okay. Well, you know, Flanders and the Flanders area of Europe, there was a huge libertarian thriving metropolis there, cosmopolitan area, Flanders and Antwerp in the 1400s and 1500s. It was actually the banking capital of Europe.
Really?
It was just thriving. It was basically
Before Zurich and before Liechtenstein?
It was a thriving cosmopolitan area, and it was basically an example of very little government. And then you had the fairs of Champagne were the same, and these were all kind of like from that moment after the Rome kind of fell, and Italy was filled with all these little city states, these little republics, and it was just a flourishing of the market system. And then the kings of Europe kind of clamped down on that stuff. And I think that's why today Flanders and Antwerp and whatnot are still kind of like very liberal with these social constructs, right?
I think there's also more different brands of beer in Belgium than any other country.
Yeah, yeah. Probably because of that history, that culture, that freedom, that uninhibited culture really takes centuries to erode. And so
we're still a lot of it here. I mean, even though it's dying.
But what you see in that part of the world is what you see there now is the remnants of that totally decentralized form of government that flourished during the 1400s and 1500s.
I don't know if you agree with me on this. It's not necessarily the government. It's the opportunity for people to do their own thing. I mean, I'm going to say in my generation, other than if you started real young in the computer business, you know, like Carl and some other people, you had a chance to do stuff on your own. Obviously, in real estate, you could have. But the trading floor was a real big deal. I mean, thousands of people came down here to to do something on their own, and that's all gone. I don't know. I don't know that real estate. I don't know that Audrey could start today. You know, virtually all of her customers come from people she'd been doing stuff with for 20 years. I don't know how you start unless you got a family of 40 people all looking for a house. I don't know how you get. You know, get the. I was in the.
Well, government has placed so many restrictions in our way that it makes it difficult for people to enter these markets.
But I was in the remodeling business, and I had a couple of car loans and stuff with the local bank, and they lent me $10,000 to remodel a building. And I don't see walking in there today and getting that kind of loan. I mean, or what am I going to have to pay for it? But I mean, we've made it very, very difficult. I mean, I don't know how you talk about some of these, you know, neighborhoods in the city. I you know, we're talking about kids that aren't even really going to school. I mean, the idea of being...
Well, they don't want to go to school because they don't value those services.
But the only entrepreneurial activity is the drug trade.
Yeah.
I mean,
Well, in Baltimore City, for example, they got hundreds of living wage laws that make it illegal to hire some kid who graduates from an inner city school that is poorly run, who can't read and can't do math. It makes it illegal to hire that graduate of that school system because their job skills are not worth whatever the city planners, the central planners of the city, deem is a living wage. They can't work in that city. So what do? They find work. They find work in a what?
But the prices,
they find work in an illegal market.
The prices have, unless, you know, when you think back, I mean, I've been fortunate, you know, I've got to travel a little bit when I was the SIBO board and stuff. And as you probably can figure out, I love talking to people, and every person I talk to, I don't care. He could be what people would think is the dumbest person on earth. I'll figure out something.
Oh, I do the same thing.
I know you do. I mean, I'll figure something that guy will tell me that I didn't know. So even though he's supposed to be dumb and I'm supposed to be smart, he knows something I don't know, and we get along fine. I fly into New York, right, and I get in a cab, and there's this, like, very distinguished older black gentleman driving. So, of course, we start talking. And he goes, you're from Chicago. And I go, yeah. And he goes, can you tell me who the first citizen of Chicago was? Who happens to be DuSable, a black Frenchman. He goes, you know, you're the first person from Chicago that knew that. And I've been driving for like 40 years. I go, well, I hope I didn't. It was anyway, we start BSing, right? And the guy's a cab driver. Now, in New York, you know, the cab industry, if you work your tail off, they always got paid a little better than the people here. But he was able to bring his first two kids, he put them through college as a cab driver. Can you imagine
does
that?
Does he own the medallion?
I'm not sure he did. I mean, I'm not sure if he did. But I mean, the point is, what I would like to do, Hal, when you get like 15 gnomes working for you down there, maybe I could talk you guys into doing it. What I'd like to do, I was ran this by Russell, with this absolute bull bleep CPI they put out now, I would like to have real stuff, essentially CPI'd in terms of hours per regular person. You know, where a car is now, you know, $45,000 divided by $15 an hour or whatever the hell it is, $20 an hour, what somebody make. That type of thing. Actually, the people. What the median wage is roughly $40,000, which is $20 an hour, right? Yeah. So we're talking about how many thousand. Well, this guy put his first two kids through college, and one of them is a brain surgeon, literally at the University of Chicago. Handsome kid. The daughter graduated number one law school from like NYU. God's sake, she could have been a movie star. And wow. And the third kid is in the army, and he's a doctor, right? Or no, he wants to go to med school. He did some other stuff. He did his undergrad in the army and all this kind of crap, and he must have gone to med school in the army, or what's pre-med, whatever you want to call it. So then he looking for a med school in the army for him to pay for it. They wanted him to sign up for like another 7 years. Well, the guy at the University of Chicago calls up, hey, he's dead. He's not signing up for 7 more years. I'll pay for it. So the first kid, I'm sitting there going, first of all, the guy's an incredible gentleman. And he's got three kids of that level, and the guy's a cab. But he was not some dopo cab driver. He's a really bright guy. And I said to him, I go, what are you doing still driving the cab? The guy had to be 70. And he goes, not that that's all that old. He goes, well, you know, are you married? And I go, no. I go, but I have a longtime girlfriend. He goes, well, you know how it is. And I go, tell me. Well, you know, I retired and I'm home. You're just not supposed to be there 24/7. You know, it's okay. They want you to retire, and we have a great marriage. She's a great lady. I would never say anything bad ever, and I'd do it all over again in a second. He goes, but you know, if I walk down to the cab guy and I grab the cab 2 days a week, we're just a lot happier. She gets to do her stuff done without me. She's vacuuming. She's not getting my feet out of the way. He goes, we're just a lot happier. A couple days, I get to talk to somebody like you. I make a few bucks. I enjoy it too. That's what I'm doing. Yeah. And you know what? One of the most pleasant rides I ever had.
Yeah. You got to be busy. I can't imagine being retired ever because I enjoy my work too much.
I don't think I've ever seen a guy with three better-looking kids than this guy.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, he was a pretty good-looking guy. His wife must have been a movie. I mean, all three of them could have been in movies. I mean, he had two doctors and a lawyer.
Uh-huh.
I mean, good for him.
You know? Well, that sounds like the typical Haitian story, man.
You know, he might have been. I don't know.
My mom and dad didn't.
I cannot tell. Well, I mean, black people look at me. They can't tell I'm Irish and Italian, but I can't really tell by looking at black people where they came from. I mean, I'm just not good at it. I mean, can you?
Well, Haitian people have this, the ones that run in my mother-in-law's circle, they have this air about them that you can spot from a mile away. You know, like this pride. They have this work ethic. They have these high expectations on their kids, and they hold each other to higher standards. So,
this guy might have been Haitian.
Yeah, it's easy to see from like 10 miles away. I mean, that's all I did for 2 years is hang out with Haitian people, and we're talking about Haitian people that came here in the 1970s to escape Haiti.
You know, he might have been one of those.
Yeah, but man, the expectations on the kids are high. They do whatever they can. They'll work three jobs, four jobs, and they don't want assistance. They don't want any government assistance. My mother-in-law, she would not let my wife, who was a little girl at the time, or my brother-in-laws to trick-or-treat. It blew her mind that kids would run around the neighborhood begging people for candy. That just did not enter the equation in my mother-in-law's head. So they weren't allowed to trick-or-treat.
Well, you know, the weirdest thing this guy said to me was, I'm so proud of son number one, because, but to be honest with you, I was waiting for the call. If he wouldn't have done it, I'd have been pretty pissed. Yeah. You know, I mean, boy, talk about kids that were growing up right, huh?
He better help his brother because I helped him. Yeah, it just sounds like, you know, maybe he was Haitian because, man, you can just see the Haitian community from a mile away. It's a really fun group of people. And, you know, I just feel sick about Haiti. But, you know, the weird thing is, in America, my parents didn't expect us to even go to college. I mean, my mom's expectation was, all right, you're 18, get out of the house. That was it, right? That was her expectation. And I don't know how I ended up getting a PhD in economics because, you know, in order for me to go to college, I had to do the Navy for 6 years. I had to get the GI Bill and go to college that way. But there was zero expectation in our house.
No, just out of curiosity, could you have... What would it have gained you? I mean, I don't know if there even was one in your spot. Funeral I went to last week, a buddy of mine from high school and college, his son is a, I think he's a lieutenant colonel in the Marines. He just got the lieutenant colonel spot.
Yeah.
Now, he went to Notre Dame, but on a ROTC ride, or I don't know, was a scholarship or whatever. Now, could you have, I mean, does the University of Idaho or any of those places out there, are they big? If you would have said, "I want to join the Navy," and gone in as it was, could you have done that and done the college and the ROTC the same time? Or, I mean, you signed up first and then you went to college after. But what economically could you have done it the other way? I guess is my question.
You know, I don't remember ever hearing about ROTC in high school ever, and my parents never talked about
Hear about it in Notre Dame at Marist either. I never heard about it.
Yeah, my dad wasn't a college grad. I think he went one semester. My mom went one semester and dropped out during their first semester of college. So college was never an expectation ever in our household. And the only person I knew that went to college was my stepfather, Jim. And in order for him to go to college, he was a World War II veteran, and he got the GI Bill.
GI Bill, okay.
My stepfather's the same way. And my stepfather went to Paul. Where'd he go?
That's where I went. I mean, that's the route I took, was G.I. Bill.
Okay.
Yeah. He was a big influence in my life. When he died in 2013, man, it really hit me hard. And when we went to his funeral, the way we did it was everybody gave their favorite stories of my stepfather, and all the stories that were told about him, I was like, man, that's me. I'm Jim. So that's the reason why I went to college on the GI Bill, because he's the one that inspired me to do it. Nobody else in my family expected me to go to college.
Well, you know, part of the GI Bill had to do with mortgages.
Yeah.
I don't know if you know that or not, but you probably did. And half of it, and the weird part was when you came back from World War II, I don't know, my father didn't do that. He became a policeman. Also, he didn't go to college. My stepfather did. There were no women included in the GI Bill. So even though there were all kinds of the whacks and the waves and all that stuff, and ladies had served for 4 and 5 years on hospital ships.
Yeah, it was just a different time.
There was no women. And the black people, minorities, I guess there were some Japanese or Asian people that fought in Europe and fight over the other way, but the blacks theoretically qualified, yet in the southern states, if you were a black from Chicago, you could have gone to school. But if the blacks in the southern states, they wouldn't let you into colleges, although some of the, I guess all black universities maybe would have. And
the HBCUs were, like, A&T had been around since...
Yeah, so you could have gotten maybe one of those, but you're not going to go to Alabama, you weren't going to go to, you know, Kentucky, those kinds of places. But
the HBCUs,
also,
I think,
mostly
were land-grant universities.
Yeah, but most of the people were, you couldn't get a mortgage, even though they were going to help you with it. So, I mean, it was... The part about the women, I absolutely can't believe that. Well, I can believe it. It's the U.S. We do all kinds of weird stuff.
Well, Tom, at the time, really only the wealthy white people, for the most part, really college was something for wealthy people to go to. It wasn't until the 60s and 70s where that started to break down, right?
Well, plus it was, I mean, obviously anybody, and I think obviously anybody who served and the GI Bill was kind of fine. But it's the one thing you learn when you, that's the thing that frosts me so much about this election, to be honest with you, is people that I know and think had a brain cell working believed the BS from one side or the other. So easily.
I don't buy it either.
Yeah, so
I just like the better team.
But I mean, my uncles, who were tool and die makers, those kinds of things, and one of my uncles actually went to Hawaii. And I think he was on ship repair, if he was a welder or what he was, but he wasn't in the, quote, army. He was with a private contractor. So those guys come in. My one uncle, he enlisted. He couldn't get in because he was a tool and die maker. So there was this huge fight between people that went in the army and people that were needed to make the bullets and the rifles they were using, right? I mean, much more so than people thought, because it was a huge tug of war between the two. So my uncles always gave my stepfather a bunch of crap, right? And a college boy, and I always thought it was them just being grumpy and Italian or something. But they actually, there was a huge difference in people that they didn't get to go. Now, they didn't get killed. Of course, anybody who got killed didn't go on the GI Bill. The idea that I had to stay here and do this stuff, even though I volunteered, and we come back, all these guys got free education, and now I'm the guy who was allegedly too talented to go, and now that guy's my boss.
Yeah,
you know, so there is, it wasn't all grins. Nothing ever was, right?
These government interventions, they create winners and losers.
Oh, without a doubt. So what do you got going this way? You guys have any kind of a team? What are you doing down there? Do you go to any games?
Well, just trying to get moved in. We're closing on a house today.
Good for you.
At 11, and then moving in, and got to stock it with. Furniture. We didn't bring any furniture from Utah. The kids kind of beat it up, and it wasn't worth moving across the country.
God. Well, new furniture, that's an investment, new furniture.
Well, we're not going to go hog wild. My wife is not one that needs a lot of stuff. You know, I walk into people's houses, and there is ceramic stuff everywhere. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
She's not like that at all.
All right, bud. Well, good luck on all that stuff. SP Futures down 2, NASDAQ Futures down 5. If I was betting a quarter, I'd say we'll be up on the day. But who knows? We're down pretty heavy in Europe, so maybe we won't.
It'll be up over the year.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, we're already up on the air. Yep. We will be back tomorrow. Stacks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.